It's written by a couple of guys in the same family, Mark Stewart Ellison and Eli Ellison. And the book is called Dear Mom, Dad, and Ethel, World War II Through the Eyes of a Radio Man. And it is a novel. And Mark is on the phone. Mark Ellison. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Tron. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, great. Now, is this your father you worked with?
Yes. My father, unfortunately, is no longer with us. He passed away in 2004, but he was intimately involved in helping me write the book.
Now, I'll tell you, Mark, Mark Stewart Ellison worked as an attorney and a reporter. Wow, that's a combination. Articles appearing in Physicians Financial News, Dutchess Magazine, and the Poughkeepsie Journal. So, yeah,
yes.
You've been a pretty busy guy.
Yes, thank you.
So tell me about this. How does this book present itself?
Well, my father served in the United States Army Air Corps from 1942 to 1945 in the 327th Fighter Control Squadron, and while he was overseas, he wrote about 300 letters home to his parents and sister Ethel. That's how he got the title, Dear Mom, Dad, and Ethel. And my paternal grandfather kept them until shortly before his death in 1961, and then my father had them in his safe for over 30 years. And over the years, my dad would occasionally tell humorous war stories. He was much more reticent on the serious stuff. And in the late 90s, we got together and we thought this would make a great book. So we took the best 100 or so letters. My dad wrote out anecdotes. We fleshed them out together. We did library research, internet research. I corresponded extensively with a Belgian historian named Jacques Winant, who is an expert on wartime Verviers, a small eastern Belgian city where my father was stationed from the fall of 44 to the spring of 45. And the book is about 90% true, except for the sex scenes, which are absolutely genuine, as are the wartime letters. We couldn't tell it as a nonfiction because after 60 years, my dad's memory was very good but not perfect, and we wanted to protect anonymity of certain people.
Sure, I understand.
And one of the concerns we had was that it might seem like he's having too good a time. My dad was an optimistic fellow. He didn't
Boy,
want...
I guess.
Pardon me?
I guess he was. I was reading some of these letters. I mean, wow, he was definitely optimist.
Oh, yes, and he didn't want to worry his parents, and the letters talk a lot about ball games, dances, and shows. Yes, there were a lot of ball games, dances, and shows, but there were even more buzz bombs, air raids, and the occasional sniper's bullets. So we had to supplement the letters with a storyline and extensive historical research to describe a more complex reality of what was going on the ground.
Now, did your father go by the name of Don?
No, Don is a pseudonym.
Okay.
Don Quicks is based on Eli Ellison between the ages of 20 and 22.
Okay.
We named him that for two reasons. One, as you might guess, after the Cervantes character, Don Quixote, a bumbling do-gooder. And he's quick. He's fast. He's a natural athlete. He grows up in a working-class neighborhood in the Bronx, running races around the block, playing stickball, pretty good half-miler on the track team. And he's basically a good guy. He shuns religious ritual, but he lives by a secular moral code, and at the same time, he's a bit of a wiseacre. He sneaks into Yankee Stadium to see Babe Ruth play in one of his last games. He makes off-color comments, gets sent down to the principal's office. So he's part Eddie Haskell and part Wally Cleaver, the schemer and the all-American boy, and he takes this dual character with him into the Air Corps when he enlists in 1942, and in fact, during the Battle of the Bulge, Verviers is evacuated by some 56,000 American soldiers, including my dad's unit, the 327th Fighter Control Squadron, which we refer to as the 888th. There's about 300 men in that. And the city is protected by MPs. But Don sneaks back in using phony passes to be with his girlfriend. It shows that he's always gaming the system. He's very reckless. He could have been shot. He could have been arrested. It also shows his great love for his girlfriend, Denise. He would do just about anything for her. He would die for her, recklessly or foolishly. So it's a very human story.
Wow, it is. And you know, it really is. It's based on very true facts.
Yes, and it's very unique also because it details not only military life, but civilian life in four European countries, Britain, France, Belgium, and Germany. Unlike the combat soldier who was usually in the field, fighter control soldiers lived and worked alongside civilians in urban and semi-urban war zones. So we do take you to the bunkhouses and the mess halls, but we also take you to the London tube shelters, the downtown coffee houses of Versailles, the cobblestone streets of Verviers, the rolling hills and white farmhouses of Stombert. And it's not about a Rambo or a John Wayne type. It's about an everyman soldier, an ordinary enlisted man trying to get along in some extraordinary situations.
We're talking to Mark Stewart Ellison, co-author with his father, Eli Ellison, wrote the book, Dear Mom, Dad, and Ethel, World War II Through the Eyes of a Radio Man. And it's, where do we get it, Mark?
Oh, yes. You can order Dear Mom, Dad, and Ethel, World War II Through the Eyes of a Radio Man at iUniverse.com, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, any Barnes & Noble store. You can also call iUniverse toll-free at 1-877-288-4737. That's 1-877-288-4737. And please visit my website at MomDadAndEthel.com. That's MomDadAndEthel.com, where you can download a free history of the real-life 327th Fighter Control Squadron and read a lot of other interesting stuff.
Oh, that's neat, man. What a great undertaking you did. Yeah, and your
Thank
father.
You.
We certainly appreciate this, and I know the listeners and the readers will, too.
I appreciate that, Tron. Would you want to talk about similarities between post-liberation Belgium and World War II and Iraq today?
Sure. What do you think?
I think there are many similar characteristics. You have the most salient characteristic is the use of terror weapons. The V-1 buzz bomb and the V-2 rocket were directly analogous to the roadside bombs in Iraq today. People never knew when or where they'd hit. They were Damocles sword over the heads of civilians in particular. They had no military significance whatsoever. They were designed, they did kill a lot of soldiers, but they didn't affect the strategic picture at all. They were designed to kill and terrify as many civilians as possible in the hope that they would pressure their governments into negotiating a settlement with Germany. It didn't work back then. It remains to be seen what's going to happen in Iraq today. And there are other characteristics that are very similar to what's going on in Baghdad. Just like the government in Baghdad today, the government in Brussels, shortly after the liberation in early September of 44, is very weak. It responded very slowly and indecisively to an energy crisis. There were shortages of coal, steam, gasoline, electricity, natural gas. A natural gas pipeline serving Verviers and Liège ruptures, leaving Verviers without fuel. There were prolonged electric power outages. People could only iron their clothes, listen to the radio at certain times of day, usually early afternoon. Farmers in Stombert, a nearby hamlet just east of Verviers, make ethanol in their backyards to power machinery. You had a very weak economy, very much like Baghdad today. You had 90% unemployment in the textile industry in Verviers, and Verviers was a textile town. You had pitiful salaries. Skilled male textile workers made less than a quarter an hour. That's about $15 a week on a 60-hour work week. Compare that to the $100 to $125 a week female aircraft factory workers in the U.S. were making at the same time, and you realize these folks had a problem. You had food shortages. People in Verviers were rationed 1,200 calories of food a day. That number doesn't exceed 1,500 until the end of the year. That's about half of what you need for a healthy diet. They supplemented their diet through the black market, which flourished throughout Europe, but it usually wasn't made up completely. And it's all the more remarkable that people opened their homes and their kitchens to Allied soldiers. My father writes home about getting so many dinner invitations that he actually has to turn some down. They mend his clothes. They do his laundry without accepting payment. And GIs were paid very well in comparison to their European counterparts. Corporal's pay in the American Army was probably something like captain's pay in the UK. In fact, there was a survey taken of British soldiers shortly before the Normandy invasion where they were asked what their chief complaint about Americans was, and their answer became a household phrase: overpaid, oversexed, and over here. And there were also insurgent elements, like in Baghdad today, in post-liberation Battle of the Bulge, Belgium. You had a proliferation of resistance movements that fought the Nazis and refused to disarm. Some of these people became outlaws, whose favorite target was farm country like Stombert. They also menaced tram operators. They fomented labor unrest. There were strikes because of the low salaries. And during the Battle of the Bulge, you had some 1,500 German parachutists dressed as Americans in U.S. uniforms, dropping down around Verviers, cutting telephone wires, engaging in espionage, sabotage, blowing up electric power grids. Sound familiar? A lot like the insurgents in Iraq today. So there is this very dangerous mix of a weak economy, a massive food shortages, massive energy crisis, and insurgent activity that is present both in post-liberation Belgium, Battle of the Bulge, Belgium, in World War II, and Iraq today.
Oh, yeah. You've done your homework. I appreciate that very much. Now,
Thank
I want you.
You
to tell that website again.
Okay. My website is momdadandethel.com. That's MomDadAndEthel.com. And you can order the book through iUniverse.com, Amazon.com, any Barnes & Noble store, And you can call our universe toll-free at 1-877-288-4737, 1-877-288-4737.
Hey, Mark, I appreciate you coming on with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Tron.
Take care of yourself.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.